It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Our apologies for the late start, but we are here ready to go with you for the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that is happening in Giants football. Lance Meadow with you. John Schmelk will be joining me a little bit later on the program. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You can follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. The telephone number, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us this morning as the Giants look to regroup and bounce back after falling to 0-3. Following a 38-0 loss to the Carolina Panthers, so their attention now turns to the Kansas City Chiefs, who were 3-0, off to a very strong start under new head coach Andy Reid. And the task at hand gets that much more difficult this week as the Kansas City Chiefs lead the league with 15 sacks. They've got a tremendous front seven. Justin Houston put on a show against the Eagles last week in which he had 4.5 sacks. It doesn't just end with Justin Houston. They have a lot of depth. They have a very strong secondary, and the Giants right now are trying to get this offensive line back on track. They've been decimated by injuries. Chris Snead, David Boss, Tom Coughlin mentioned when he addressed the media yesterday that they're just not 100% at this point. They're still recovering from their offseason surgery, so they're going to try to work out the kinks. Tom Coughlin did not rule out that there may be some changes on the offensive line. I think they may toy with that idea as the week progresses. But the bottom line is they've got to deal with the 53 men on the roster right now. You're not going to get any savior off the street. You're not going to get any free agent that's going to walk in and all of a sudden turn this team around. They've got to dig deep, and they've got to do it within. Let's head to the lines, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. And we start with our very good friend, Victor in Texas. Victor, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on? Hey, you know what? You don't have to apologize for the late start, guys. You guys do an outstanding job. Appreciate it.
Appreciate that, Victor. What's on your mind today?
Well, I didn't get a chance to call in yesterday, and I started looking over some of the stats. And I'm not a big stat guy, but when things stand out to me, like, you know, you rush attempts, and you only get 60 yards, and you're averaging 3.8 yards for the entire game, and your opponent's averaging 4.2. And, you know, you have only a total number of 135 yards, and this is passing. And your opponent throws the same amount. 27 attempts has 223 yards. You have zero punt return yards. And what I'm bringing that up for is because that maybe could have sparked something, and there was no spark in that, no punt return yards. Also, our third down efficiency, and we're 3 for 12, we're 25% on third down. Why? They're over 50% on third down. And obviously, you know, if you're going to go for it on fourth down, you should have more fourth down attempts. But we didn't have a lot of fourth down attempts because we only – went for it once and we failed at that. Why they went for it twice and actually had 50% a success rate with it. And our red zone efficiency was not there either, you know, 0 for 1, 0%. And something that, you know, is very, it's kind of small, but, you know, if you look at the fourth quarter, now you're in a game and you're losing, you know, your defense should be trying to get you the ball back. We only held the ball for 3 minutes and 36 seconds in that entire quarter. The Panthers had the ball for 11 minutes and 24 seconds. Well, that's, now, I don't know if that's telling. That's, I know it seems like it might be garbage time at that time, but it's something that, you know, are we actually trying? And that's not even, Lance, that's not even looking at the game itself. That's just looking at the numbers. The game itself tells a totally different story. Our offensive line was getting blown back. Our defense looked lethargic. our running backs couldn't block for Eli, and it just seemed like Tom Coughlin said, we were getting manhandled. Like, it felt like there was the Bad News Bears in there versus, like, the actual Bears. I mean, we were getting blown up. I don't know if it's a strength conditioning thing or a drive, but we just looked very lethargic in that game, and it was very depressing to watch because I know we have some great athletes on that team, on the offense and the defense. But a couple of good – one good thing I could take out of this is that it's an experience. It's an experience, and from experience, we grow. And hopefully the Giants can grow after this game, but if not, I think at some point there is going to be some changes that need to be made. So let me get your opinion on that.
All right, Victor. Well, I think the first thing that you touched on in terms of the third down lack of efficiency, as I like to call it, and I'm just going to bring it down because we're getting some feedback, Victor, but appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Is mainly because they can't run the football. So when you can't run the football, you're going to face a lot of third and longs. And as a result, that's why you're not getting high percentage opportunities on third down. And they have not been able to put together lengthy drives. So that would explain why the time of possession is so lopsided and why they aren't able to dominate in terms of time of possession against any of their opponents thus far. Dallas, remember, it was extremely lopsided. It was lopsided against Carolina. Denver, it was fairly even, but at the end of the day, Denver still dominated at the line of scrimmage. So until they get this running game going and they win the battles at the line of scrimmage, you're not going to see that third down efficiency go up, and you're not going to see the time of possession go up, because all that means is it's going to be not a multi-dimensional offense. It's going to be a one-sided offense, which is basically all about passing the football. And if you're not picking up first downs, you're not getting good yardage on first and second down, you're going to be faced with a boatload of third and longs. And no offense can sustain durability if they face third and longs time and time again. So I think that's the big reason why these numbers are telling those stories. That's why it comes down to the offensive line. And I'm not trying to simplify things, but that's where you set the tone. That's how you protect Eli Manning. That's how you get the running game going. If they can't work out this offensive line, everything else is going to suffer as a result. So the biggest priority this week is if guys are not 100%, then you got to turn to the bench. And you've got to do it quickly because you need at least a number of practices under your belt so that these players can get on the same page. So if you want to turn to a Brewer, if you want to turn to a Mosley, you've got to get them practice reps. They can't be doing this from the sideline. I think they'll put Boss and they'll put Snead through multiple tests throughout the course of this week to determine whether or not they are game ready. And that's what Tom Coughlin touched on. I think that was the biggest thing to come out of his press conference yesterday, was the fact that he admitted that these guys are still not 100%. As a result, that's one of the factors why they haven't been able to protect Eli Manning. Will Beattie's not dealing with injuries. I mean, that was just an overall bad performance for him. And Justin Pugh is a rookie. So that's going to happen. It's the learning curve of being a rookie. You're going to have your ups. You're going to have your downs. That's expected, despite him being a first-round pick. He's still adjusting to the fast pace of the league. So that's not necessarily a red flag. But when your veterans are not getting the job done, that's an issue. Perhaps injuries is a big reason why they're not playing up to par. So if they're not ready, you've got to at least experiment in toying to the bench. Let's head back to the lines. We go to Greg in Milburn. Greg, what's happening?
Hey, how are you?
Doing well, Greg. What you got?
Well, I called you last week, and I said that I was upset with the lack of a running game. I was upset with the lack of a 50-50 moments. You know, basically, you know, they didn't win as many of those, you know, toss-up moments that could have turned the game. I honestly can't say there were many of those in this one. I think the running game was just abysmal, and that's in part due to the offensive line. I think you couldn't really do anything when Eli wasn't getting protected. What really disturbed me was the lack of fight and the lack of even showing, you know, that they were trying, that it seemed as though they were lost. They just didn't know what to do. Maybe it was complacency. I don't want to say the Q word. You know what I mean. But they just looked lost. And I've seen some embarrassing losses as a Giant fan. I remember the Philly collapse in 2010. I remember San Francisco in 2003. I remember the two to Carolina in 2005 in that playoff game where they lost 23-0, giving up 200-plus rushing yards. The 2009 game against Carolina where it was the last game at Giant Stadium. They needed to win to keep their playoff hopes alive, and they just fell flat and did nothing. And this ranks up there. And they just did not. They looked lost. They looked just completely abysmal. And honestly, I think it falls on Jerry Reese. I really do. I think that the offensive line's been deteriorating for quite a while. Ever since that 08, in 08 when they were, you know, publicizing how good this offensive line was, from 09 to now, players have been falling off. They've been deteriorating. Deal's been moving around. It's clear that he's not a good tackle. He's a good guard. He's an okay guard. But everything's just been falling apart. And I don't know. And that's the personnel is not what it used to be. And that falls on Jerry Reese.
Well, he has drafted a number of offensive linemen, Greg. The problem is they just haven't panned out. It's not as if they've completely abandoned the offensive line. Continue on.
You're saying that like he drafted them high. He drafted Brewer in the fourth round. He drafted Mosley in the fourth round. Pugh's the only guy we drafted highly, aside from Didi, who was a second-round pick. And Didi really wasn't worth a huge contract extension in my mind.
Well, Beatty clearly is having mixed results this season, but I wasn't necessarily saying that he wasn't drafting them high. I was saying that they did make draft picks with offensive linemen. The problem is that they haven't developed quick enough to the Giants' liking. You should be able to get production out of fourth-round and even fifth-round picks at offensive linemen. That's not asking much, Greg. They don't have to be first and second-rounders.
Here's a good one, though. How many fourth-round picks are actually starters in the NFL?
Well, I mean, I don't know a number off the top of my head.
14%.
Okay, so it's 14%.
14%.
But that doesn't mean so the Giants can't get one fourth-rounder? That's asking too much to pan out?
You know who that falls. And that falls on Jerry Reese.
Well,
and that falls on the coaching staff.
I think
I'm not going to say anybody should be fired. I'm not going to say anybody should go because it's too close to this to the Super Bowl, and it's clear that Tom Coughlin still has it and can still develop this team and still drive it in the right direction. But it's clear that he has not been given the resources on the offensive line to do that.
Well, I think that certainly is an issue that is brought to the forefront. I appreciate the phone call, Greg. Thanks so much. But, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to look at how they could solve it right now. I mean, breaking down coulda, woulda, shoulda in the draft is not going to solve anything right now. They've got to look at what they have and, if anything, experiment with the offensive line. And then when it comes to next year's draft, clearly the offensive line is a big necessity. Maybe they'll take another guy in the first or second round, piggybacking off of what they did with Justin Pugh. You know, you mentioned David Deal. They could use David Deal right now. A lot of people were criticizing him that he hasn't played up to par either, and he hasn't been consistent. Getting David Deal back sooner than later would be a blessing in disguise right now for the Giants, because at least you can move Pugh around. You can even move him to left tackle if need be. You can have him play guard. They've tested him at a variety of positions. It doesn't hurt to get creative at this point. I mean, where else are you going to turn? You wish that you had a playmaker develop. You wish that James Brewer, 2 or 3 years ago, would have all of a sudden taken the opportunities that were brought his way, grasp it, and run with it. Unfortunately, it hasn't panned out that way. And as far as the Mosley and the Matt McCants is no longer on the team. You know, you hope that you would have gotten some value in those late rounds. But some of these guys failed to stay healthy. Some of these guys failed to establish themselves during training camp and separate themselves from the pack. You know, that's been the biggest disappointment, I think, about this offensive line group. I don't think they expected to be decimated by injuries so much, but in the event you're decimated by injuries, you hope that the guys who were brought in that know the system can step in and fill the voids, and that hasn't necessarily been the storyline that has been followed, and not just necessarily this season, but in seasons past. You know, Deal's battled injuries in the past, Snead's battled injuries in the past. I think last season they had the luxury of a Sean Locklear, who was that swing tackle guy who you could plug in. He had that experience factor, so they didn't have to turn to their late-round picks. Now you don't have Locklear in the mix anymore. You have to turn to your late-round picks. You don't have the luxury of a depth chart anymore. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We got Dominic in Pennsylvania. Dominic, what's happening?
All right. I apologize for the drop call yesterday. I was in a bad area. But anyway, I wish that everyone would slow down and stop blaming Gilbright and Fuel. It's not Gilbright's fault that the line allowed 7 sacks. He can't play the game. He's not a player. once we get over the fact that we're giving Eli the protection, maybe we can start disputing, you know, or scrutinizing the play calling or whatever. But we're not even getting plays off because there's no protection. Number two, how do you – the defense held they held the score, and I think that Perry Fuel did a good job with his defensive schemes in the first half. But what people have to understand is that there's a human element. It's easy for people to say, you know, this person should have did this, this person is to blame for that. But we're human beings, you know, at the end of the day. And you can't expect the defense to play with the same level of intensity if they're constantly on the field. People, you know, yes, we pay them, yes, they're paid millions of dollars to play the sport, but you don't have unlimited energy. So, I mean, the defense, I mean, in all fairness to the defense, did they even get a break? No, they did not. So I wish people would understand, one, the human element to the game. Number two, who is responsible for the, you know, for the performance in the game on the gridiron? Because that's not Fuel and that's not Gilbright. Outside of that, another point I wanted to make, how many of the linemen that are currently with us were there in the last Super Bowl?
Well, your nucleus in terms of your starters, Chris Snee was there, Will Beatty was there, David Boss they brought in via free agency from San Francisco, so he's the new guy in the mix. Justin Pugh wasn't there. Because Pugh
was
obviously just
there.
Drafted. Well, Kevin Booth is another guy. So you have about the nucleus, as I mentioned, has been there.
Right. So my point is, why are we blaming everybody else when we have four-fifths of the personnel that was there to get us to the Super Bowl in the first place? The answer is, I have to agree with Lynn from Maryland. That I pay close attention to what he says. The answer is on the 53. You can't do it one day and not do it the next day. The guys are lazy. There's a lack of focus. And, the killer instinct is just lacking in the last game. So, you know, there has to be some focus. There has to be the hunger. You know, and the other team, they you know, let's be honest, they were hungry. They wanted it more.
Well,
they rushed four guys.
They did. Carolina dominated at the line of scrimmage, Dominic. I'm not arguing that. And in terms of the offensive line, and appreciate you weighing in, thanks so much. I don't necessarily think that you can look back and say, well, the nucleus that's still intact in the offensive line won a Super Bowl, so we should give these guys a break. I mean, the bottom line is the play, the level of intensity has deteriorated. So even though your nucleus is still intact, you still need to take into consideration that guys are not performing like they had been 2 or 3 years ago. So as a result, you need to prepare accordingly. That's the biggest question mark. That's the crossroads that the Giants are in right now. You want to keep consistency at the O-line, but at the same time, you want to prepare for the future. And I think injuries can't be overlooked because Snee and Boss went under the knife, and clearly they're not 100%. We expected them to get back to 100% sooner than later, but they're still using this as the preseason because Snee and Boss did not see a lot of time in the preseason. Remember, Boss got hurt in the preseason, so he didn't get a lot of reps. And Snee, they were moving along slowly. So these first couple of games is their first opportunity to play next to one another and get their legs back underneath one another. So that, I think, you have to take into consideration as to why the offensive line has dipped. Overall, though, the performance, listen, we could sit here, we could break down the defensive performance, we could break down the offense, we could break down the special teams. All across the board, there's room for improvement for this Carolina game. All across the board, everyone deserves blame in terms of the lack of effort and the lack of execution. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Ayub in Huntsett. Ayub, what's happening?
What's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
You got it. What's on your mind?
All right. I have a few things that I wanted to get out. The first thing, I wanted to know what's going to be done with the linebacking core, because I feel like that, along with the defensive line, is one of our main problems on defense, because for once in a long time, we actually have – you know, a stable at the cornerback position. We have Aaron Ross back. We got Prince. We got Corey Webster playing fairly better than what he did last year. Antro Roll, aside from Stevie Brown going down, our secondary is actually was a strong point, actually. But if the defensive line and the linebackers can't get any pressure, any sort of, like, you know, on the quarterback, then those positions are going to get exploited. So I want to know what's going to go on improve that, like the defensive line and the linebacking core, because you see it in the first few games that we haven't got any pressure on any of the linebackers. Justin Tuck, like, I know, like, what was it, 2 years ago he was contemplating retirement. Like, I don't understand that. Like, it's just no intensity on the defensive line, no intensity on the linebacker. We got Mark Herzlick. You know, he's a go-getter. He's a hard worker, but he's not a coverage linebacker. You know, Jaquan Williams was supposed to be the answer to that. Like, I want to know what moves are going to be made.
Well, in terms of personnel, I mean, they're not going to bring anybody in off the street. They brought in Alan Bradford, who they claimed off waivers from the Seahawks, but the reason he hasn't seen much time is because he's still first learning the system. So in terms of the linebacker core, you know, they may mix and match in terms of where they put the personnel, but you're not going to get new personnel. There's nobody right now on the market that's going to come in and be a difference maker. There's no Chase Blackburn out there who knows the system that you could bring in and all of a sudden he will readjust himself into the Giants system. That's just not going to happen. You're basically stuck with the nucleus that's currently on the roster. They have some versatility. You mentioned Jaquan Williams. You know, he hasn't necessarily played up to expectations. He's had some penalties. He's also had a play against Carolina where D'Angelo Williams took him right into the end zone. You know, they haven't been executing top to bottom, so that's been an issue. You're right. You need the linebackers. You need the defensive line to produce at a high level so that, therefore, you don't leave your secondary out to dry. And I appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. But you also need your secondary to play at a high level, so that also buys your defensive line some time to perhaps get to the quarterback. Now, Aaron Ross started off playing great against Carolina. He had that interception. You thought maybe that would have been a momentum swing. Unfortunately, things broke down after that. And part of that is because, like I said, the time of possession was so lopsided. You know, the defenders are out there 10 times longer than the offensive players. That's why it really has to start with the offense. If you put together long, sustainable drives, you're going to get your defense rested, and you're also going to keep the opposition on the sideline. And that sometimes is your best weapon. Forget the X's and O's from a defensive standpoint. Make the opposing quarterback and his offensive players just watch. That's your best weapon. It's not necessarily about how you're going to go and stop them. Keep Alex Smith on the sideline. How about that? Put together some lengthy drives. And whether that means dumping it off to your running backs in the flat, then so be it. You know, it doesn't have to be flashy. It doesn't have to be creative. You just have to move the chains. That's the number one goal. That's the number one priority. And that's what they're going to have to work around this coming week. And Tom Coughlin even said this yesterday. You know, we're not going to solve everything overnight. He's got a laundry list of issues. He wasn't trying to hide that yesterday. He wasn't trying to hide that from the fans. He wasn't trying to hide that from the organization. This team knows that it has issues across the board. But right now, you've got to get some positives. The positive would be, if your offensive line is not doing the job that it had done the last couple of seasons, then you need to adjust the offensive scheme. Part of adjusting the offensive scheme is utilizing your running backs in open space, dumping them off to them. You don't have to necessarily go for the home run. You don't have to get the big run on the ground, but you've got to look at your personnel and utilize them correctly so that you can at least get more than 10 first downs. Because 10 first downs is not going to cut it, whether it be against a defense that ranks in the middle of the pack or a defense that ranks in the top five. And they're going to see a defense that ranks in the top five this week in Kansas City. So it's not as if they're going to get a week off where they're not going to see a lot of pass rushers come their way. As a result, they've got to deal with the personnel that they have on the field right now, but you've got to tune it. You've got to tweak it. And you've got to see, how can we get our players in the best position to attack this Kansas City defense? If Eli Manning doesn't have enough time to get down the field with Victor Cruz and Akiem Nicks, to me the next best thing is get your tight ends throughout the middle of the field and get your running backs out on the sides to try to at least gain positive yardage so that you're not facing third and nines, third and tens, and third and eights. Because if that becomes the storyline against Kansas City, that's playing right into the hands of their defense. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's go to our good buddy Charles in North Carolina. Charles, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Coach Charles.
Let me start off by saying, man, we got to stop blaming Jerry Reese. You know, everybody has a salary cap. Look what this team has on this team. We got Eli Manning, two-time MVP, Super Bowl MVP. You got to pay the guy. We got Victor Cruz, one of the best slot, or maybe arguably the best slot in the league right now. You got Antrell Roll, Pro Bowl safety. You got to pay these guys. So everybody has – we have plenty of leaders and great players on this team. You know, would I would like to have maybe a second or third round linebacker? Yeah. But I think Reese has done the best he could do with the salary the way it is and to keep some of the leaders on this team. I hate losing Ahmad, but it is what it is. You know, I think he's done a decent job with just piecing it together the best way he can. With that being said, let me change gears here. I just had to defend Jerry Reese real quick, but I'm here. You know, I'm here in North Carolina, so I may get a couple of articles that you guys are not seeing. Chase Blackburn came out. I've seen the article this morning, but he may have said this yesterday. Came out and said, "Hey, you know, I pretty much gave my guys the playbook. We knew what Eli was going to do. I've practiced against his offense for years. We knew when they were set up in their formation exactly what they were going to do." So, John, I got to ask the question because I hear you say all the time, well, the wide receivers can change their routes and this and this and that. Chase has come out and admitted that he knew everything. He knew what we were going to do before we did it. He knew the formation. He knew the routes that the wide receiver – he knew the only route the wide receivers could take. That's being predictable. When Chase Blackburn comes out, this is not me saying it. This is Chase saying it. Chase has come out and said, "Hey, we knew what routes to jump. We knew what in the bump and run. We knew what routes they were going to run. We knew what adjustments they could make. We knew when to go right after Eli. We knew it. We knew. I knew. I gave the playbook to the guys." When you hear that, doesn't that pretty much say, "Hey, Bill Brad, you're pretty much predictable, buddy"? Chase played against his offense and practiced against his offense every day for the last whatever, so many years, whatever. So I understand that he has a grasp of what the offense can do, the scheme. But any smart defensive coordinator in the league can watch film over the last 5 years and say, "Okay, this team does the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over. It's schematic. We know what their scheme is." What are your thoughts on that coming from the player himself saying, "Hey, that was exactly what they were going to do. That's why we jumped routes. We did this and that. We knew when to go right after Eli. We knew when to pull our ears back and go after them. We knew what kind of running plays they were going to run. We knew which way they were going. We was there before they could even get set up." What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Charles, John is going to be joining me a little bit later on so we can get his thoughts later on. But I'll tell you from my perspective, number one, and I'm not denying what Chase Blackburn said, but it's a lot easier to say that when your team wins 38-0. It's easy to pat yourself on the back. Had they not clicked and had the defense not performed at the level it did, I don't know if Chase Blackburn's going to come out and saying we knew
every single play.
So, I mean, I think to a certain degree that may be a bit of an exaggeration, and it looks like we lost Charles. Appreciate you weighing in. But as somebody called in late in the game yesterday in terms of our show, I believe it was Rich who had asked the question about, you know, did Chase Blackburn and did Dominic Hixon give the Carolina Panthers a huge advantage? Perhaps that's true to a certain degree. I don't think it was a huge difference maker, and I don't necessarily think what Chase says means that the Giants' offense is predictable by any means. You know, we've talked about this week in and week out. It's a complex offensive system. Does Chase Blackburn know the personnel? Absolutely. Does he know some of the tendencies? Absolutely. But for him to come out and say that he knew exactly what the Giants were going to run each and every play, I don't know if I would necessarily buy that. I think that may be a bit of a stretch. The bottom line is the Carolina Panthers' pass rush was clicking on all cylinders and all angles. They got to Eli Manning. That's why they shut down the Giants' offense. Eli Manning didn't even have a chance in the world to test this Panthers secondary. This was a Panthers secondary that was missing four members in terms of corners and safeties. Four members. They were playing one backup after another. They were bailed out by a very strong front seven. If Carolina doesn't get the pass rush that it did with just four guys, you know, this game could have very well been played out a lot differently. Now, we could sit here and also play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game, and I'm not sitting here and trying to make excuses. But given the fact that Carolina's defense clicked, I think it's a lot easier for Chase Blackburn to come out and reveal, "Oh, I knew the Giants' offense like the back of my hand. We knew every single play that Eli Manning was calling. We knew all his signals. We knew every single route that the receivers were going to run." I don't know if I would necessarily buy that. I think the pass rush helped them achieve their goal. and help them execute at a very high sustainable level. But to say that that's an indication that the Giants' offense is too predictable and they can't have success moving forward, that would be a stretch as well. Kevin Gilbride has been here for X amount of years. Eli Manning has been here for X amount of years. Offenses don't just turn around and pull a 180 out of nowhere where they're going to all of a sudden throw out the old playbook and bring in a new one. You know, if you want to make the argument that they should add a new wrinkle here and there, that's fine. But to say that they should completely revamp this offense, an offense that, let's keep in mind, has been top five season in and season out, and yes, has had its ups and downs, but has also had a period, a lengthy period of success, that doesn't mean that you should all of a sudden rethink and retool your offense. It means, though, that you have to, at least based on what happened against Carolina and what's happened over the first two games of the season, you've got to get a little bit more creative. You got to dig deep. You've got to put personnel in different spots. That's what I think the Giants need to take away from these first three games. It doesn't necessarily mean that they need to completely overhaul or completely revamp, but it may mean that, okay, the way we've been doing things, the way we've been going about things for the last couple of years doesn't seem to be yielding consistency or positive results. So therefore, we need to rethink our game plan. And if that means putting in, as we've been echoing each and every day, putting in more passes to the running backs, so be it. Maybe you don't have to go to the home run. You run Victor Cruz with some different routes to have him come back to the football if Eli Manning doesn't have enough time to get it down the field 30 to 40 yards. So you settle for the 10 to 15-yard pass. The same thing can be said for the tight ends and Akiem Nicks. You just got to adjust based on what the defense is presenting. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Carl in North Carolina. Carl, what's happening?
Not much, guys. Love your show.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, I've been a Giants fan, lived in New York for over 30 years. Never been able to get to a Giants game until Sunday. Okay, we got bad linebackers. We got a bad offensive line. When they came out at halftime, they looked like a bunch of old men with bursitis and arthritis.
They did.
Somewhere in the third quarter, we had to punt the ball. I said to my wife, why is the punting game so bad? She said, they can't run, they can't throw, they can't stop the run, and they can't stop the pass. What would make you think the punting game is going to be any good? I said, enough said, let's go. What can I do?
There was a breakdown across the board. I'm not going to argue with you, Carl. There was a breakdown on offense. There was a breakdown on defense. And they couldn't even get a spark, like you said, on special teams. You know, Steve Weatherford has had two consecutive games where he hasn't necessarily punted effectively. And they've also been overshadowed by penalties. Let's not, you know, overlook that. You had Demontre Moore pick up a penalty where the Giants should have got the football back. That enabled the Panthers to continue their drive. Jaquan Williams is called for a hold on another penalty on special teams. You know, that's not helping your cause. If you can't move the ball effectively on offense, the last thing you want to do is give the ball immediately back to the opposition or give them favorable field position. And that's what happened time and time again.
They came out with no spark. After getting beat down in the first half, how can you walk out the tunnel, you know, without a little pep in your step, something?
Well, you expected that from the Giants, especially when you're starting the third quarter on defense again. The Panthers just scored late in the first half. They have a sizable lead. You need to make a stop. You need to get the ball back in your offense's hands, and you need to have momentum start to swing. And you're right. They did not answer the call. Overall, all four quarters, there was no energy. There was no fire from this group. And that's why it was a huge disappointment, and that's why it showed on the scoreboard 38-0. All right, Carl, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Now joined by John Schmelk, who comes in to try to make some sense of this game as we tried to
do yesterday.
Is that
what I'm doing?
Well, based on the calls we're receiving.
I mean, make sense of it. I mean, what's there to make sense of? It was pretty much domination in every facet of the game, no?
It was. Listen, we're not here to make excuses for the game, but everybody wants a quick fix. That's what a lot of the callers have been asking for. And you're not going to get a free agent. You're not going to get a rookie to come in here and all of a sudden turn this around.
You're also not going to fire an offensive or defensive Correct. Coordinator and turn it around. And look, I get that. And this is the conversation we always have. And it's in every sport, it's the same way. Whether you're talking about the Knicks, whether you're talking about the Yankees or anybody else. When things go bad, fans have the tendency to go after two people. Well, two groups. One is either the coaching staff, because they feel like, oh, you make one change in the coaching staff, you turn eight mediocre players into eight better players, and all of a sudden you're a better football team. Well, the problem is that the Giants already have a coaching staff that consistently turns players that maybe aren't high draft picks into good players. Just look at the tight end position over the course of the last 5 or 6 years for the Giants. That's number one. Number two, the second group of people that people tend to look at is the stars of the team. Now, for the most part, Giant fans haven't done that. Do you know why? They know what Eli Manning can do. They have faith in him. And they know in the end this really isn't his fault. But on defense, who's been one of the prime targets of people trying to go after these last couple of days? Justin Tuck. And to me, out of all the problems the Giants have had over the first three games, Justin Tuck is way on the bottom of the list. He's been your best defensive end. He's been better than JPP, and he's been better than Mathias Kiwanuka. So, unfortunately, these are some very, for lack of a better word to me, Lance, unsexy problems. You know, the sexy problems is you having a bad quarterback or the coach, you know, deciding to go for it on fourth down when he shouldn't or something like that. Those are easy problems to identify and to kill people on. It's a lot harder to pick out small things like protection, like linebackers being disciplined in making tackles. And like the players have said these last couple weeks, it's a lot of small problems that balloon and mothball into really big ones that show up on the scoreboard. And there was no bigger example than the one last week, where the small problems, quite frankly, became big problems. If your offensive line plays like that, you're not winning a football game. I don't care who you're. You could be playing a college team. If your offensive line doesn't block for your quarterback, you're not winning. And I don't want to depress people or anything, but next week against the Kansas City Chiefs,
people are not ready to talk about the Chiefs, by the way.
Well, hold on a second. It's okay. I want to just give a couple defensive nuggets here before we get back to the rest of the calls. And I'm taking a lot of time. I'm yapping a lot. We'll get back to you guys in just a second. Second fewest points per game in the NFL at 11.3. And keep in mind, folks, they've played good offensive teams now. The Philadelphia Eagles, the Dallas Cowboys, and who was their first game against? I'm trying to remember. Was it the Chiefs?
Kansas City
Chargers?
To open the season? That's a good question. You know, it's such a blur. They beat, oh, Jacksonville.
And they beat Jacksonville, obviously not That's a very right. good team. But Philly and Dallas, obviously, explosive offensive teams on offense. And they've done an excellent job. Leads the league in sacks with 15.
Correct.
That's great for the Giants' offensive line. Number two in the league in pass breakups. Plus nine on the season. By the way, you know what the Giants are? Minus nine. Not a good number.
Dead last.
And they're also one of the best third down defense in the league, allowing teams only convert 27% of their third downs. Good luck.
That's not a good sign when your average third down is about third and eight and third and nine.
And maybe their best player on defense is their nose tackle, Dontari Poe, who has 3.5 sacks in the nose tackle position, which is impressive enough on its own. And then you look at the banged-up interior Giants offensive line. You know, Coach Coughlin talked about it yesterday. Chris Knee and David Boss both getting checked out for their various injuries, knee, neck. And they're going to have to block this guy. Then you got Tom Bali and Houston coming off the edge. They have a combined 20 quarterback pressures between them already this year in three games. This is going to be a very big test for this Giants offensive line. And if they don't play better, and I think they will, but if they don't play better, it could be worse than last week on the offensive line. If they play better, and I think they will, it'll be better. But the Chiefs are more talented than the Carolina Panthers in their front seven. And I didn't even mention Derek Johnson, who, by the way, is one of the best inside linebackers in football.
And if you don't have enough time to throw the football, even if you try to get a short pass, John, this secondary is so effective. They're very aggressive.
Eric Berry.
Not even have that to fall back on.
Eric Berry's a heck of a player. Now, we'll see about the health. Tim Lewis didn't practice yesterday. They're starting free safety. Now they're to Brandon Flowers, who's really their number one cornerback. Now, they have depth there. If Flowers doesn't play, you still have Dunter Robinson and Sean Smith out there, two very good veteran corners. So they'd be okay, but Flowers is their number one guy. And Eric Berry is a tremendous safety. He shut down Jason Witten in week number two. This guy can do everything. He is a sack, interception, fumble recovery, and a bunch of pass breakups this year. He's a legit Pro Bowl playmaking safety.
There's a lot of game changers on that roster. We are going to get back to your calls, John. I just want to get your thoughts on one thing real quick.
Of course. What do you
this
got?
Has been a big debate through the early portion
okay.
of the show.
What do you got?
Chase Blackburn comes out yesterday, and I'm going to read the quote now because we've been referring to the quote, but I haven't read it. And I think the audience should know for those of you who are unfamiliar.
I think I've seen it, but I like
to hear it. Charlotte Observer, this is what he said, quote, "I had an idea of what they," referring to the Giants, "run and what they like to do in situations. We had a great game plan going in. I've been sharing all the info all week. Guys, all of us, linebackers were out there knowing what to do. Defensive backs knew what kind of routes they were going to get off, the route combination. It makes for a big difference when you could play the game at that speed. We were able to play fast because we were aware of what they were going to do," end quote. Now, a lot of callers, Charles from North Carolina, one of our most notable callers.
Is this killing Gilbride over this?
Well, is and not necessarily killing it, but saying that this is another example that the offense is too predictable.
Well, I think regardless of who the offensive coordinator is, you have a guy that's been with the organization for how long was he here? 8 years? And has seen this group practice every single day. I mean, the Giants aren't going to change their offense
exactly.
in one fell swoop. That's impossible. That's never going to happen. And like we've talked about, the Giants' offense is variable. Based on coverages, the wide receivers run different routes on different plays, and things change from play to play based on what the defense shows. So
Charles wasn't necessarily buying that argument.
No,
either.
He wasn't?
No, I'm just throwing it out there.
You tried.
We tried. We tried. But no, Charles wanted to hear your perspective on this, too. That's why I posed the question.
Look, do I think Chase Blackburn's presence helped the Panther defense? Sure, I bet it did. And I expected it to heading into the game. However, this is the point I'm going to make. If Chase Blackburn isn't there, the offense still gets shut
Correct.
Down because you can't protect your quarterback. Nothing Chase Blackburn told the Panthers about Eli Manning and the Giants' offensive line would have changed the fact that the Giants couldn't block anybody, which is really the bottom line here, folks. The Giants couldn't block anybody. Eli Manning got sacked 7 times and a half. A half.
And they couldn't block the Cowboys or the Broncos either.
Correct.
It's not as if this was something that was brought into the limelight all of a sudden overnight. They had issues week one, week two, now week three. And the other thing that I threw out, John, it's easy for Chase Blackburn, nothing against Chase Blackburn, to say this when you beat a team 38-0.
It is easy to say that.
Oh,
that
I knew true. Everything. It was very simple. We executed perfectly. Eli Manning has some success. I guarantee you Chase Blackburn's not telling reporters about this.
I'm trying to think. The last couple of years, teams have picked up players with the intent of getting intel on the Giants' offense and
defense.
Cowboys
had Kyle Bosworth.
Kyle Bosworth is a good example. He was only here for a training camp, but still, that's a decent example. Last year, I think the Redskins pick up somebody before one of the Giant matchups late in the year to try to get intel on the Giants' offense or defense. I can't remember who it was. I remember it happening. It was one of those deals where they picked up a player just for like a week. A couple years ago, someone picked up a backup quarterback for a week to get a feel for the Giants' offense. I'm trying to remember.
I can't remember. Was it last year or the year before DJ Ware on the Bucks? Was he on the Bucks in that game?
He might have been. Guys, look.
I don't remember exactly.
And it helps. But look, the players got to go out there, play, and execute. That's the bottom line here. If the Giants' offensive line blocks, guess what? I don't care what those Carolina Panther defensive backs do. They're going to get beat by Victor Cruz, Akeem Nicks, and Ruben Randall. Do you know why? They're better players. The Panthers are picking up guys off the scrap heap, the guys that weren't even on rosters a week before. They had 4 or maybe even 5 defensive backs not playing going into that game. Trust me, Chase Blackburn could give those guys the Giants playbook. Victor Cruz is still faster, he's still quicker, and they're all still better. And they would have killed them. The Giants receivers would have absolutely destroyed that Panther secondary. I'm telling you guys, it would have been a massacre if Eli Manning would have had time to find them down the field.
That's why it's disappointing that they didn't have a chance to test them, because certainly on paper it was an attractive matchup. Let's get back to the lines, because I know a lot of you are holding. We go to David in Oklahoma. David, welcome to the program. What you got?
Hi, how you guys doing?
Doing well, David. What's happening?
All right, two things. One of them is, and you already touched on it a little bit, but quicker passes, three-step drops. I mean, is it really – like, I'm all for big plays. I love the big play, but I also like to win. And one big thing that I noticed out of the three games is that against Dallas, our offense was best whenever we were doing those slant routes. They couldn't stop us. And then it opened up the run just a little bit, even though we were getting more than 2 yards per carry.
You know, so David, the thing about it too, and hang with us. We'll let you finish your point. But Eli Manning was actually asked this question yesterday in the locker room, and I forget what reporter asked him, but they asked him, "Why don't you try more, you know, short routes and short passes and stuff like that?" And Eli made the point. He goes, "Look, we actually did try, but many times either the pressure came too quickly for even those, or B, the Panthers were sitting on those short routes because they knew the defensive line was getting to Eli Manning so quickly, they didn't have to worry about the passes down the field. So you had those linebackers sitting in the middle of the field trying to read those slants. You had both corners being very physical near the line of scrimmage, playing press. And when you can get to the quarterback, and this is how the Giants won their Super Bowl in 2007. When you can get to the quarterback with your front four and leave your other seven guys in coverage, you can protect a lot of different things. And that's what the Panthers are able to do to the Giants, because they could get pressure with their front four. And even with a shorter passing game, they were able to neutralize some of the stuff the Giants were trying to do. And maybe that has something to do with the intel Chase Blackburn gave the Panthers, letting them know how the Giants react to that pressure and some of their hot routes and stuff like that. That I will buy.
Well, that's good to know. I'll take that, though. The other thing is the captains of the team. You know, Tuck, to me, always had some fire to him, you know, before the game and whatnot. But Eli had mentioned something about breaking character if he needs to, and in order to make a spark in the team. But the thing is, you know, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Tom Brady was criticized by so many people because he was being harsh on his team. I loved it. The fact that he got in their face, the way that he, you know, showed himself, he was frustrated. And
all right, it looks like
we lost David. There he goes. That Oklahoma connection.
Apparently the lines having some trouble out in Oklahoma. But
luckily, David got both his points across, right. And I agree with what he's saying about Tom Brady. I liked it, too, to be quite honest with you. These rookies have to understand, in the Patriots' circumstance, that those types of mistakes and drop passes are not going to be tolerated. However, I've seen Eli Manning get on people for running wrong routes. I've seen him yell at receivers. I've seen him do stuff like that. He doesn't do it in that showy way, maybe, that Tom Brady might have done it, or we've seen Tony Romo do in the past with the Cowboys. But, in my opinion, oh, wow, all our lines just went dead there. Maybe we're having some phone problems here in the Meadowlands. I'm not sure. All our lines just clicked off there in one foul swoop. Very, very strange. It's still powered on. We'll see if we can figure that out, folks. Give us a call back. We'll try to get you up on the lines at 201-939-4513. If Eli Manning all of a sudden flips a switch and he turns into this yeller, screamer, emotional guy trying to pump you up before the game, with these players knowing what type of guy he is, I mean, do you even take that seriously? Is that going to work?
I just don't think that's who he is, John, though.
That's what I'm saying. That's why it's not going to work, because players would realize that it's some phony show.
Exactly.
The reason it works is because it's a natural thing. And I don't know. To me, that's not the answer. These guys, folks, just think of this concept. And most of our callers, frankly, haven't made this point, and I'm pretty happy about it because they're smarter than that. The Giants didn't lose against the Panthers because someone didn't give a good pregame speech. A good pregame speech wouldn't have erased 38-0. A good halftime speech wouldn't have erased a second half. Now, might have given a little bit of a spark and helped a little bit, sure. But when we're talking 38-0, speeches don't fix that. Execution fixes that.
Players executing and delivering results on the field. Not getting pep talks in the locker room.
Not exactly.
Not getting pep talks on the sideline. Not drinking extra Gatorade. I mean, that's a stretch. That's basically people just trying to find another reason or more rationale as to why the Giants haven't been performing. We've been getting a number of tweets, and I also want to work that into the conversation.
Oh, yeah, I've not looked
at
Twitter.
And, of course,
yet.
The debate over the Giants need to make a change in offensive coordinator will continue, and that will never end.
And by the way, Ted Crum made a great point. He tweeted me last night. I think he was listening to the archive of the show. One of our smartest tweeters. He sent some good stuff in there. And he made the point, and it was a great one, and we should have brought it up yesterday. If you know that Tom Coughlin isn't going to be here long term. And I'm talking 3 or 4 years. And not because the Giants are going to fire him, because he's going to decide to retire at some point. I think that's a fair possibility in the next couple years that that might happen. But if you bring in a new offensive coordinator, and then you know you're bringing in another new coach in a year and a half or 2 years, you're going to want that new coach to pick his own offensive coordinator. So then you're looking at three offensive coordinators over the course of, say, 3 seasons. And if there's one thing you've learned from watching the NFL, whether it was Alex Smith in San Francisco, Mark Sanchez with the Jets, you can go down the line of quarterbacks, Josh Freeman in Tampa Bay, having to deal with all these different offensive coordinators. It doesn't help your offense. It hurts you. Do you really want to make multiple changes in multiple years at offensive coordinator? I don't think that's a good thing for your franchise.
Well, I was getting to a tweet that's related to this.
Sorry,
topic.
I totally interrupted you. That's my
fine.
Fault.
No, you tried to add to the conversation, and I think we've brought that up in the past, though. We've talked about other quarterbacks who have struggled and have had their growth stunted as a result of a revolving door with respect to offensive coordinators. But at Marwan New York 77 says the Ravens won the Super Bowl last year after switching offensive coordinators because Harbaugh fired Cam Cameron and brought in Jim Caldwell. First of all, Jim Caldwell was already on staff. He was the quarterback's coach. So it wasn't as if they went outside the organization, brought in a new influence, and revamped the entire offense.
And by the way, there's nobody to me on this offensive staff that's experienced enough. And usually it's going to be a quarterback's coach. And Sean Ryan only recently got that job a couple years ago. I think he's a very good, smart, young coach. But he doesn't have the experience, and in my opinion, to be an offensive coordinator.
And then Kevin M. Gilbride, who is Kevin Gilbride's son,
is
also even younger, too. And he's in charge of the wide receivers. So you don't have a great deal of experience, even if you wanted to make a change internally and promote somebody.
I mean, Pat Flaherty is probably, and Gerald Ingram are two of your more experienced coaches, but very often you don't see your offensive line coach or running back coach be promoted to that offensive coordinator spot. I think both guys are capable. They could do it. They're smart. They're good coaches, but usually you don't see that type of promotion from in-house.
And it's a good example with respect to the Ravens, but there's more to it than them just changing offensive coordinators because of the play calling. Camp Cameron did not see eye to eye with Harbaugh. There were some issues behind closed doors. It wasn't so simple as he wasn't running enough pass plays compared to running plays, and that's why they went to Caldwell. It's not as if we've got issues in chemistry with respect to the coaching staff here that they need to make an abrupt change.
And how's the Ravens offense doing this year, by the way?
It's taking a step back. Has not necessarily picked up where it left off. The defense is what's carrying them. The special teams. They had two defensive and special teams touchdowns against the Houston Texans. That was a big reason why they won that game, and that's a big reason why they've been able to regroup compared to how they performed against Denver. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Naeem in New Jersey. Naeem, what's happening? Let's go to Bob, in West Orange. Bob, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? I just wanted to make two comments. One on the Chase Blackburn thing, as far as knowing what the Giants were going to do and all. But, you know, from playing football and all that, football, to me, always comes down to the man over you.
Yep.
And if you're not better than that guy over you, it really doesn't matter if they even know what's coming. Vince Lombardi made a great statement. We'll tell you where we're going to run the ball, and we're still going to run it if we block you. It looks like the Giants are just being beaten man on man. It just looks like the talent on the other side of the ball is better than what we got. And I've been watching the Giants for over 40 years. We've been since 1980 to the playoffs 15 times in the last 33 seasons, 5 Super Bowls. This is a great organization. And right now they're in a little downspin, and I'm still not sold that they can't come back and beat the Chiefs. I'm not a big advocate of that offense Kansas City has. I think we could shut them down. But my point was, man on man right now, we're getting blown off each side of the line. We're not beating the person over us. Whether they know the play, whether they know what's coming, if we block and we execute, we're still going to get the playoffs. I don't agree with the Blackburn thing even a little bit. The one area, though, that I've been concerned with, and it's been going on probably since the 90s, we were always known for our linebacker core. You know, whether it was Harry Carson, Lawrence Taylor, Carl Banks, Jesse Armstead. We always had, like, all-pro type caliber linebackers. We've never gotten back to that. We've never drafted to recover that again. The linebacker play, and if you look back over Giant history, it's been awesome. Brad Van Pelt, Brian Kelly, you could just keep going, Huff, way back in the 50s and 60s. something is really missing up top, like, because your linebacker core, they sit right in the middle of the field. They're between the line and the secondary. They're that set group that has to really come up and really play forward on the ground game, really read the lineman releasing for run or pass block, you know, and getting that signal called out in time for the secondary to react. But, you know, I'm wondering why, if you guys could just maybe, you know, give a little insight on why we don't ever seem to want to make that draft pick to get back to that type of linebacker core again. And also, just the fact we're being beat. We're just being out-talented on both sides of the line. The people are playing against us so far just look better than we do. They're just, I mean, literally pushing the offensive line 3 yards back, and that has nothing to do with play calling, nothing to do with them knowing the play. We're just losing on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and football really comes down to beat the man over you.
Bob,
and
best –
if you beat him
– go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish up, Bob.
And I'm just like, you know, being a Giants fan, like, I mean, I love Big Blue, and I'm so proud to be a Giants fan. Like I said, 15 playoff appearances in 33 years, that's every other year. 5 Super Bowls, that's one every 7 years. I mean, you got to be crazy to be turning on the Giants. This has nothing to do with losing faith. I know the Giants will be back. You can't not be back with an owner like Maurer and a coach like Coughlin and guys that care to the extent they do. But maybe, just maybe, we are starting to show some lack of talent in some areas, and maybe they're aging and some injuries. And because you can make all the excuses you want, you could talk all day on the radio about it. We're just getting beat.
Bob, maybe the best phone call we've had in 2 days, and I think you hit the hammer right on the head. And up front, especially on the offensive line against Carolina, they just got beat, and the Giants' defensive ends on defense have simply gotten beat for the most part these first few games of the regular season. And to me, Lance, there's no amount of coaching. And, Bob, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Good stuff that can do that. In terms of the linebackers, I guess, really quick, they just haven't found that match of value with their draft position where a linebacker makes sense. We've looked at the draft the last 3 years trying to figure out where the Giants could find a linebacker of value. Now, this year, I suppose they could have went Ogletree or something like that when they made their pick, but there hasn't been a great match with their first-round picks and even second-round picks in terms of a linebacker the last couple of years.
And I think it also plays into the fact that Perry Fuel, with his system, he likes to rely on more secondary players and some of those sub-packages as opposed to the main units where you have 4 defensive linemen and 3 linebackers, and that probably has influenced where they've gone with respect to the draft.
And here's the scary thing, and I agree with Bob, the Chiefs' offense is far from explosive and impressive. However, where the Chiefs do their work is in the middle of the field in that 5 to 15-yard area. They throw it to Dexter McCluster. They throw it to Jamal Charles.
Even Donnie Avery.
They throw short passes to Donnie Avery. They use Dwayne Bowe's size in the middle of the field to post up defensive players and use his body. And they're going to go right after. And if Anthony Fasano comes back as well this week from that knee injury, they're going to go right after that linebacking core. And they have a good offensive line that will run block. And they will pound the ball and pound the ball and pound the ball. They had a 14-play, 8-minute drive in the second half against the Eagles to seal that game. They are not going to go down the field. They will pound you and pound you and pound you, and the Giants are going to have to assert themselves physically on defense to stop them.
And speaking of the linebacker core, you also have to keep in mind Alex Smith will take off and run, too.
Great point.
He did that time and time again against the Dallas Cowboys.
50 yards rushing in that game for him. He's the second leading rusher on the Chiefs.
So if he doesn't see anything in the middle of the field, he doesn't see anything down the field, John, Alex Smith will run the bootleg, and he'll run for a good 10 yards off the sideline. Whose job is supposed to be there in position? It's supposed to be the linebackers. And they have been not there more often than not in terms of the last couple of games. They've been sealed off.
And I'm telling you, you're going to see a lot more 4-3 than you have the last few weeks against this Chiefs team. You'll see some nickel because their most common formation is the 11 formation with one tight end, one running back, 3 wide receivers. So you will see a lot of nickel from the Giants. But to stop Jamal Charles, who, by the way, is still a top 5 running back in this league, I think you're going to have to see those 3 linebackers on the field more often than not. And you're going to have to see Mark Herzlich play a little bit better at that middle linebacker spot.
And just getting back to Bob's point, and I think he really summarized things beautifully in terms of, you know, you have to look at things that maybe it is just the individual players. You know, everybody calls up and says they've got to revamp the defense, they've got to revamp the offense. Do you think putting in a new offensive system is going to make Will Beatty more effective in terms of blocking? He's still going to have to do the same thing.
Tom Coughlin said it in his post-game presser after the game. We got beat one-on-one from the coach's mouth, folks. He's not one that throws players under the bus. He's the coach that comes out after the game and says this was my fault. He flat out said it. We got manhandled. That's the quote from the coach. That's not me. That's Tom Coughlin's quote. We got manhandled. They beat us one-on-one. They outperformed us. How many different ways can we say it? The Giants players got their butts kicked.
Even with max protection, they got their butts kicked.
They had six guys blocking four, and they couldn't protect Eli Manning. 6-on-4! Darryl Scott didn't exactly look like Mahmoud Bradshaw back there either, though, protecting Eli Manning.
No. It was not one-on-one sometimes. It was one-on-two, and the Panthers still won that battle. Let's go back to the lines, 201-939-4513. We go to Mike in New York. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, Mike?
I have to say that the Panthers game, it was a disgrace. Yes, everyone was getting blown up. Boss couldn't pick up a twist for his life. But I don't think Gilbert should get a complete carte blanche, because we're 3-8 in our last whatever game since last year. And the only games we won have been complete blowouts, not even close. We just can't win any close games, or we can't climb back into games. And I think it shows.
In fairness, I wouldn't call the Saints game last year a complete blowout. Remember, the Saints did come back in that game. I believe it was a one-score game or a 10-point lead in the third quarter of that contest. But you're right. The Eagles game was a complete blowout last year. I'm trying to remember what the third
one
was.
The Green Bay game.
The Green Bay game, which the Giants control start to finish. Those two, that's fair.
And we killed the Saints 52-27. I mean, we're good at going finishing it out. But if we get down, it seems like everyone on the team gives up, and I can't really find a place to put that blame.
You know what? The funny thing about it is, though, most of the losses the Giants have had haven't been in close games either. I mean, they got destroyed by the Ravens. They got destroyed by the Falcons. The Broncos controlled that game start to finish. So the Giants really haven't been involved in that many close games. I mean, I guess the closest ones is probably the game against Dallas in Week 1 this year, and the game against Washington in the second half last year were probably the two closest, right?
Yeah.
The Philadelphia
that one
was close, too.
Philly, too. Excellent point.
And then the other thing is, Gilbride does have two complete shutouts in his last 12 games or 11 games, which, any other offensive coordinator, we'd be jumping all over him. Not that we aren't.
Well, Mike,
that's fair too.
But
let me
pose this to you. If you're pointing out the offensive clinics, do we not give Kevin Gilbride credit for that? You know, it's easy to kill him for the donuts, but then again, they have had some outbursts on offense, so you also need to give him credit for that somewhat as well.
But they have been very inconsistent, and I think that, as much as that is Gilbride, I think it's the team overall, offense and defense. And if you want to throw Perry Fuel into the mix, that's fine too. Both units on offense on defense have been extremely inconsistent, even going back to the first half of last year.
It just seems like if everything's going great, everyone believes, and as soon as it starts going bad, we give up.
It's been a cycle. And appreciate the phone call, Mike. Thanks so much for weighing in.
He's not wrong about that.
No, he's not. And we've brought this up on numerous shows, John. You look at the schedule from last year, and you look at it even this year. You never know what to expect from this team, specifically from an offensive perspective.
And there is a bit of a front runner look to this team sometimes, where things go well, they pile on, they play particularly well. But he's right. At times in the past, when things have gone badly in games, you don't necessarily see that, all right, guys, let's peel ourselves up off the turf here. Let's get back into it. Let's try to make a little bit of a run. You didn't see it against Atlanta last year. You didn't see it against Baltimore last year. And you didn't see it against the Panthers yesterday. Now, is that maybe the fact that the other team is so much better that even if you have that attitude, they weren't able to execute to the point to get back into the games? Sure, I guess that's possible. But I think to a certain extent, he's right. A lot of times when the team gets down, they have trouble making that run back into these games after going down big.
I buy that to a certain degree, John, but let's not forget, you know, 2011, this team had one fourth quarter rally after another. And last season,
2 years ago, though, different team.
What about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game last year? They were in an early hole.
That's fair.
What about the Cleveland Browns game? They were down by two touchdowns in that game.
Also fair.
There are a little flashes of those examples. Is it consistent enough to be sold on that? Absolutely not. But there are some flashes.
Look, and no one doubts Eli Manning's and this explosive offense's ability to get back into games. That's true. And you did see that at times last year. But in more recent games, let's say the last 12 to 15, for lack of, you know, just a ballpark a number, you have not seen the type of resiliency we've seen, I think, from Giant teams in the past when they have shown that, particularly in 2011.
Give him time to throw the football. Perhaps he can showcase resiliency.
Great point, too. And again, this lack, quote-unquote, lack of resiliency, if it's even there, could have a lot more to do with just physically not being good enough to do it and nothing to do with the mindset. They could have the mindset, but if the other team is that much better than you on that particular day, that mindset, do you know what it means? Nothing.
John, you said yesterday they could bring Walter Payton back to life. They could put Adrian Peterson on this team. He could put on a Giants uniform. If he's got nobody opening holes for him, it makes no difference.
Take a look, folks. Me and Roman Obin on Giants.com yesterday, and I linked this to this on my Twitter account yesterday. We broke down three plays from the Giants game yesterday. It's a great feature. You should check it out. And we showed one David Wilson run where he had to dodge about six players in order to get back to the line of scrimmage for no gain. And we saw another play where Eli Manning was Malachi crunched by two defensive ends and two defensive tackles. Just, you see it on the wide coach's tape, how the pocket just shrinks. It's like you're sucking air out of a balloon. And the balloon is just getting smaller, 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 smaller until Eli Manning is just collapsed upon by four defensive linemen. And Roman breaks it down. It's a great feature. You should go check it out. And it just shows you how they didn't have a chance. They didn't have a chance, Lance.
Did you use Malachi?
I did not.
In the video?
I did not use Malachi Crunch in the video.
See, that alone could have been such a strong selling point. You had them at that. Then now you're admitting you didn't use that, so now the audience may not be as high as it should.
They don't want to hear from me anyway. They want to hear from Roman. He's the guy breaking down the place.
And we want to hear from the callers right now. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Andrew in Virginia. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey there, home of the great Thomas Jefferson. Let me drop a Jefferson quote on you.
Oh, what do you got?
As Giants fans, we have high expectations, but none higher than they may achieve. We know this team can do it. We've seen it. We've seen what a good defense looks like. We've seen what a good offense looks like. And we know, as fans, it's interconnected. We know the team isn't resilient when they get down because its offense isn't doing its job. Why should the defense? That's been true since 2009 when they started 5-0 and collapsed under all that bad defensive play. And it didn't help that the offense was stuttering either. We know it's there. It's not an issue that just all of a sudden appeared this year. It's there. Okay? So we're seeing that. That's why Coughlin's constantly talking about team, team, team. We know it's there. We know that's an issue. The other thing is, if we know, and I'm going to use Lance's own stats to my point here, we knew in 2011, the year they won the Super Bowl, they had the worst rushing attack in the league, one of the worst offensive lines. They still won a championship. They passed to the running backs, tight ends, and fullbacks 50% more than they did last year.
Well, though, and Andrew, in fairness, in 2011, you're right about the running game. They couldn't run the game for anything in 2011. They did do a pretty good job protecting Eli Manning that year. And the Giants in the playoffs, if you remember how they won those games, they won it with the big play.
They did, but you cannot continue to live and die by the big play.
And that's
which
fair.
Is what
that's
we
true.
Talked about all last year.
And that's fair.
All last year we talked about this. And we know that you can rewatch the tape. You see guys running open when they're not staying in the block. All Eli Manning has to do is have someone in his ear saying, you know, if you just hike the ball and throw it over there and it takes 1 second, no one's going to be in your face, so we can move the chains a little bit, build up some rest here and get something going. It didn't happen. So obviously the game plan that we're following wasn't the right one. The Panthers were ready for it. I don't care about Blackburn. I don't care about the scheme. I don't want anyone fired. I want adjustments. I want adjustments in the moment to slow down a defense that is outmanning our guys. They know what's coming, and they're going to stop it. We have got to change in the moment. We don't wait till the fourth quarter when the game's out of hand. We adjust series to series. If we go 3-and-out and they score 7, what are we going to do to get 7? That's what I'm asking for.
the game plan goes out the window and we start looking at what's happening. I want to see a pulse on that sideline. I don't want to see Eli and Gilbert looking at binders. How do we fit the game to our game plan? Throw it out the window. It's not working. Do something different. And
that
I didn't see that. And I didn't see that till the third quarter.
Andrew,
and
you make
you out with a shoulder injury.
Andrew, you make good points. And it's honestly hard for us to argue with you because you make good points. The Giants did not adjust their offense to deal with an offensive line that wasn't protecting their quarterback. And look, there aren't a ton of answers because, as you know, as a Giant fan, when you have a front four that gets to the quarterback and you can cover behind them, it's as a defense, it's pretty easy to be successful. But you're right. The Giants did not adjust properly. And if you want to put the blame on Kevin Gilbert, I hear you. But I think you have to put an equal blame on Eli Manning. He's seeing the same stuff that Kevin Gilbert is on the sideline. He's looking at those photos. He's reading that defense. And he's seeing the rush coming at him. And he knows he has to get rid of the ball quicker. And if these guys are open, he's got to make that throw too. This isn't just on the game plan now. This is Eli also making those adjustments on the field. So I agree. They did not adjust properly against Carolina. They could have done a much better job of that. That might have fixed some things. But it's a player and a coach's thing together. And you can fairly knock both of them in, I think, in that situation.
And Manning was hesitant to throw to the running backs, even dating back to last season. That's an adjustment that he clearly needs to make.
And the tight ends, too, in that short middle of the field area. No question. Even, and Cole mentioned it before, I think it was Carl, they destroyed the Cowboys with those little slant routes all game. They could have ran some of those, too. Why can't you hit Reuben Randall or Keem Nicks on a slant?
And you can't rely on Martellus Bennett running those wheel routes all the time. Eventually, you have to utilize him in the middle of the field.
Yeah, just run. You know, how often did the Cowboys have Jason Witten run a 5 or 6 yard route and just run a little curl, and you get 4 or 5 yards over the middle of the field? It happens all the time.
201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Sheila in Virginia. Sheila, what's happening?
Yeah, hi, I'm calling. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. I just heard what you said. Kevin Gilbride gets paid for a reason. Let me finish. You said, let me finish. You said, let me finish. You said, Eli, can I finish?
We're letting you finish.
Wait a minute. I know, but you said Eli Manning sees the same thing Kevin Gilbride sees. No, he doesn't. If you're in the heat of battle and people are rushing at you, you don't see everything. This guy's standing on the sideline during the entire game. You need to get his ass up in the booth.
All right, Sheila. You know, I mean, I understand you're passionate. I understand you're rowdy. I understand you're worked up.
Kevin Gilbert being in the booth, by the way, is not going to change things. Look.
They get the pictures down on the field anyway.
They have video down there now,
too, by the way.
He doesn't
necessarily need to look upstairs or look downstairs. They've got the resources right now.
201-939-4513.
Let's head back to the line. We've got Sam in Florida. Sam, what's happening?
By the way, Sam, hold on one second. You see how excited Nele was to get Sheila on just so she could drop some bombs on Lance and I? Nele is very excited about that. Sam, go ahead. How are you?
Energetic, I'll tell you that.
It's the same lady with 8 different names. But
yeah, I know it is. 100%
that
right.
That was Ann from D.C.
I think that was
Ann
from D.C.
Yeah.
That's correct.
She's got aliases.
Yeah.
She's creative. She tries we got to give her credit for that.
All right. A few things I want to hit up that I feel like nobody really talks about, and kind of Mike from New York kind of started talking about it a little bit. Let's put the Super Bowls at aside because I think we've been blinded by these two Super Bowls, and I don't want to take anything away from it because they've given my family and all our fans a lot of great memories. So I don't want to take nothing away from it. But Tom Coughlin's Giants has the same record in the last 5 years as Rex Ryan's Jets. And they went to the AFC Championship twice. If they would have won two Super Bowls, you're going to tell me that we'd be respecting the Jets right now? No way. And this happens every single year. Games like this, every single year. And it doesn't matter what different team. The only thing that three things hasn't changed, Gilbride, Coughlin, and Eli. Love them, no problem. But forever, we have these, we disappear half the season. And it's teams change. Teams change over and over. We change teams, we change players, everything changes. But every single year, I mean, Atlanta's the only game we've scored. We got the biggest blowout yesterday on Sunday since Atlanta last year by 4 points. We get blown out almost every single year. We have a game like this, two games like this, and then next week we'll go and beat the Chiefs, and that's what drives me crazy. This thing that happens, we've beaten San Francisco and San Francisco, New England in New England when they hadn't lost at home in 10 years, and then lost to, like, the Bengals the next week or something like that and scored 3 points. If that went happen exactly, it did. But we do stuff like that, and it drives me nuts. That's why I can't stand everybody talking about talent. I can't stand it. teams win with less talent than we have. We have great talent. I don't care what anybody says. Our linebackers are not great. That's the only thing. And offensive line, they are the main culprit this season. I believe in the ripple effect, and I believe that the offensive line is creating a tsunami, and it's destroying the whole team.
He's right.
I really think so, because the defense can't take it. They stay on the field so long, they can't take it. They can't run the ball an inch. They can't move the ball an inch on offense, and the defense can't keep the game close. Look, Denver, we got to the red zone, 10 points at half. We could have been winning that game at halftime. Dallas, 6 turnovers. We could have won that game. We still almost won that game. We should be 2-1 right now.
Well, that's why all hope isn't lost here. That's why at 0-3 the season's not over. Because you're right, they do have talent. And you're right, there has been a huge tsunami effect. And I love your verbiage. You're 100% right. With the offensive line, it's the foundation of your team. It's the foundation of your house. And when that goes to, you know what, the rest of the house is going to start crumbling around it. And that's exactly what we're seeing. So whether it's a personnel change on the offensive line, we'll see what happens with Snee and Boss getting their tests and everything today. Whether it's the guy on the line playing better, until that improves, you're not going to see much change. And in terms of your larger point in the inconsistency over the last, heck, you can go back to 2009 in terms of inconsistency with this team. And you're right, the Super Bowls have masked some of those problems. You're right. And that was one of their focuses offseason. No question about it. In the regular season, they've been a slightly better than 500 team the last four or five seasons.
And then in the playoffs, we're like made of gods. We become the great. I mean, the two playoff runs that we won Super Bowls, nobody can say that they're not arguably the greatest runs ever. 18-0 Patriots, Green Bay negative 20 degrees, Packers 15-1, the great game in San Francisco in 2011. I mean, it's the craziest thing. But one more thing, man.
Yeah.
I wish I could stand in the locker room and tell these guys, man. I know you guys get paid millions of dollars for what you guys do, and I don't take nothing away from you. You guys work hard, and you earned it for sure. But us on this phone right now, man, we pay to love you guys. You know what I'm saying? And I know you guys are not going to feel the way we feel about this stuff, but, man, love yourself. This is embarrassing. This is embarrassing. And it hurts because, like I said, we pay to love you guys. We love you that much. I got ink on my leg that says, I love you guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is our, like, our life, man. Other than work and our families, this is it, man. And I know their bodies hurt and all these things, but we criticize them because we love them. Like I tell my son, you get consequences because we love you, because we want to teach you that this is not okay. And they seem like they don't realize that. So we're trying to make sure that they know this is not acceptable, man.
Sam, appreciate the call.
And I don't get it. It kills me. But take care, guys.
All right,
hey,
Sam.
Great call.
Thanks so much for
Thanks,
waiting.
Sam. And very passionate, but also very logical. I thought Sam brought some good points.
And notice we let Sam finish his point.
Yes.
He didn't have to say, let me finish.
Even though we
times.
Weren't saying anything.
Correct. By the way, tremendous response on Twitter to
Funny?
Sheila's phone call. Off the charts.
What
we
got?
Seven with a T, who also weighs in a lot. Was Sheila talking to the voices in her head? Question mark. This losing streak has given fans schizophrenia. Dan, wait, it gets better. Hold on. You know, that's just the beginning of this stuff.
What else do we got?
We also have, in relation to Chase Blackburn, knowing everything about the Giants, Saraceno, or another good friend, at SJS0816. Chase Blackburn knows what phone company you have and shut the lines down.
Yeah.
The lines went down. You know, Chase knows everything about this Giants organization.
So place the call.
There we go.
Knocked him out. Had his buddy come down here with the big clippers and knock it out. Final call of the show, Lance. Let's knock it out here.
All right, let's go to Stas in Washington. Stas, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? First off, huge fan, right? I don't get to call in often because of the time difference. I think you guys do a great job.
Appreciate that.
Going back to the season, and I'm going to even take it back a little bit further last season, another call to hit on it. Yeah, offensive line is horrible right now, and I feel like that's the main reason that's causing turmoil everywhere else. That being said, right, and I'm not saying – you know, that any of my family are elite coaches, but I come from a huge family of football coaches in the high school at some college level. And I watch film to this day. I mean, I pay the $40 to have the app so I can watch the film and break down and stuff. And there's ways to protect your quarterback with a bad offensive line. You know, you make the pocket move. So it slows down the pass rush because they can't just zero in on that triangle anymore. You do have more three-step dots and quick in routes. And what I don't understand, right, because I love Kelvin Gilbride, I love Tom Coughlin, and I love Perry Fuel. I'm not saying fire them or anything. What I'm simply saying is we have probably three, I'll put our three receivers up against any three receivers in the league, period. And they got height. Two of them got great height. One of them has abnormally huge hands. And then the other one is probably the shiftiest guy out there. Why aren't we utilizing these guys in our screens? Why aren't we doing moving screens to our wide receivers where we can get that pocket going and get a little yards? I don't care if it's four. It's better than -3. It's better than a sack. You know, and we keep putting ourselves in this situation. We got to realize, I think, as a team, that our offensive line is not going to be able to do what they did before. They're older. They're fighting injuries. And we have to make that adjustment for their ailments. And it's not. I feel like they think we're still rolling out 2008 offensive line out there. And those guys were monsters. We don't have any maulers that are going to do that anymore. We got all these finesse guys. So we got to make the offense become offensive line move more finesse-like. And then we're not. We want them to power, to power through these guys. And that's just not their thing. And it's easy to point the blame at them, but the scheme, not saying that the scheme should change totally, but there should be adjustments made. You could add a couple new wrinkles. These are pro NFL players we're talking about. They should be able to make these adjustments, with the week preparation. And lastly, and I want to hear what you guys got to say, on defense, it's been bothering me, and I'm probably going to get a lot of flack for saying what I'm going to say, but I don't know how much stock you could put in someone like Jason Pierre-Paul. I think physically he has every single attribute out there to be one of the greatest defensive ends in the Giants' history. But I just don't see a heart of a champion in him. You watch him give up on plays. You watched him last year give up on plays. And what made him great in that 2011 run is that his motor was so high, but he was also catching people by surprise. It was his come-out year. I saw Strahan play through injuries. I have a video with Lawrence Taylor playing through a ripped pectoral muscle and still getting two sacks in the game. When you play with passion, you're able to move past those kind of things. And it just seems like he wants it when it comes easy. And that's frustrated me as a fan, especially knowing his talent level.
Well, and I think that this goes back to what JPP struggled through last season. And Stotts, appreciate the phone call. I think you brought up a number of good points. Last year was a matter of, yes, he was dealing with the back injury, but he also needs to learn to make adjustments so that when he gets double teamed or they throw chop blocks at him, he needs to be able to react to that. And you would hope that that would come quickly now based on what he's seen on film the last couple of seasons. It hasn't necessarily developed that quickly as a result because he's not 100%, and also he's not making the necessary adjustments, and he's not getting enough help from the defensive tackles and the other end. So you hope that that will come together as this season progresses, because clearly they need the pass rush to click eventually, or else the secondary is going to be put in a very tough position every single week to come up with stops, and these teams are going to test them down the field, and that's not a position that they want to get into. So I think with time, once he gets back to 100%, and once he realizes that, okay, teams are adjusting to my scheme, they're bringing double teams, they're bringing a running back my way, that should either open something up on the opposite end of the defensive line, or I need to use my individual talents to overcome some of these obstacles. That's a work in progress. I mean, there's no simple answer to why JPP hasn't gotten back to his 2011 form, where he had double-digit sacks and was basically a monster on that defensive line where no one could single-handedly stop him. It's a combination of the injury, and it's a combination of him not making his individual adjustments.
He's got to figure it out, though.
Yeah.
We talked about it before. Maybe the most one individual player that could change this Giants season and get better is JPP on defense with the pass rush. I mean, it's very, very, very important. So, look, he's got to figure it out, and he's got to get better if this Giants defense wants to turn things around.
All right, so that should pretty much wrap things up for us this morning. We went later than usual, obviously, because we got off to a later start. We apologize for that, but Big Blue Kickoff Live is with you each and every weekday morning, 9:30 to 10:30 in the morning.
It was nice of you to show up this morning,
It was indeed very nice. Well, Route 3 was backed up. I don't know if you got the latest traffic report.
Wait, I thought it was the train.
No, there was a major accident on Route 3, by the way.
You told me it was the train.
It was a combination of a lot of factors. everything that could go wrong.
So it started with Lance's lack of dedication. and
lack of dedication?
Then it started with the trains, and then it came to traffic.
It
a lot
more,
of excuses out of Lance this
morning.
It was
more like reenacting the movie Trains, Cars, and Automobiles. That's what exactly the title was. That's what it was more like this morning.
I believe Planes is involved.
Planes,
too,
exactly,
right?
Yes. Yeah. I couldn't remember. But it was just about every mode of transportation.
Maybe you could have taken a plane or you could have flew in from JFK to Newark.
Well, that may have not been using our resources. You know, I mean, they bring out the private jets when you get to and
true.
From games.
They do.
For me, I'm not necessarily at that stance yet.
No.
Or at that stage where I can get that type of respect.
Quite clearly not as important.
There we go. That about sums it up.
Yeah.
With that note, we will wrap up this show. Tomorrow it is Paul Dottino and Anita Marks, as well as Thursday. Friday, John and I will be back. We'll start to look ahead to the Kansas City Chiefs as they try to put this Carolina Panthers lopsided game behind them. Appreciate all the phone calls, everybody weighing in on Twitter. We'll continue the conversation at #GiantsChat. For John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one. We'll speak to you later in the week.